Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and this week you'll be joining us for the Shadow Banking episode.
The shadowy world of shadow banking.
That's right. Some places sketchier than others. We'll get into that and more on this episode. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. Right, a fun episode this week. And with me to talk about shadow banking is Monica.
I'm here along with my shadow.
And our shady but not shadowy Steve.
Good to be here.
Glad you're here. All right, so what is shadow banking? It sounds kind of like really dark web, criminal kind of thing, but it's really not that uncommon. And you've probably dealt with shadow banking and participated in it. Without even realizing it. All shadow banking is that something that's occurring outside of the formal banking system. So technically, if I lend $50 to Steve, which I'll probably never see again, that's shadow banking. It's creating a liability and an asset outside of the banking system that is, importantly, the regulators and the central bank don't have much influence over. They're not going to be able to adjust the levels of lending and transaction. And that's important in terms of being able to manage the economy, which is one of the big side effects of shadow banking. The government, and this might be a selling point for a lot of people, can't have as much of an influence in as they do in the formal banking.
All right, so let's do a quick quiz here.
Okay, me or for the listeners?
For all of you, actually.
Let's see.
You can also play at home. I'm going to mention an entity, and you tell me whether it's shadow banking or not. Quicken Loans.
Not part of the formal banking system, so technically a shadow bank.
PayPal.
PayPal, shadow banking.
Ooh.
They don't have a bank license, and they're not part of the central banking system.
Uber.
Uber is definitely, whatever they do is shadowy banking.
That's a different distinction there, yeah.
Yeah. And if it gets far enough into some cryptocurrency fundraising, that's shady banking for sure.
Stripe.
Not, if they don't have a banking license or a banking charter, then they're a shadow bank.
But Stripe isn't actually acting as, they're a facilitator of payments. They are not a kind of collector of payments themselves.
Correct. That was actually a trick question.
So you can have payments are part of the formal banking system. So it's not just, and that's a good point. There's a lot of activity that goes into banking that's not just taking deposits and making loans. So there's a formal payment structure that large fintechs eventually want to get into, or they partner with a bank in order to process their transactions and be part of the formal banking system.
We should mention that also we've talked about sort of consumer-facing shadow banking institutions, but there are also non-consumer-facing things like hedge funds and PE funds, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hedge funds and actually the entire outside market, when banks weren't holding onto loans and selling them off to investors, and they were getting traded based on, well, it turned out to be very inflated market values for the risk.
We can probably use the word fraudulent.
Fraudulent. So the credit rating, we have to mention the credit rating agencies then at this point weren't doing their job as far as evaluating how risky these things were. But the market was taking those and running with those. And maybe the markets are regulated, but there was a lot of trading and issuances, hundreds of billions of dollars outside of those public markets, so a lot of private transactions that were outside of, again, the formal banking system.
So it's not always super clear cut as to when something becomes shadowy. You can have regulated entities doing interactions or creating financial products that then can be subsequently traded in a more shadowy fashion.
Right. So your home loan, part of your home loan can be part of go into the shadow banking system. And let's say the bank keeps part of your loan, and that's still part of the normal banking system. So if they sell off some securities to some Saudi investor And they're using that as collateral for another loan in a private transaction. That's definitely outside of the formal banking system. But your loan is cut up into pieces that way. So according to Fitch, which recently came out with a warning on shadow bank lending and its risk to the entire financial system, they estimate that just a little bit of assets were in the shadow banking world, about $52 trillion in worldwide assets, and that's about 13.5% of total assets.
In the world.
In the world.
Is that percentage growing or?
Yes, that's a great question. In fact, it's up 73% from 2010 to 2017 in that worldwide asset figure.
That's a really good stat. So I wonder if I refi my home or get a new mortgage loan and I go through Quicken Loans, am I at a higher risk than going through a traditional lender like a bank?
I don't know exactly with Quicken Loans, but usually there's a payment processor that's going to stay on you for making those payments and making sure that's a good asset. Sometimes that's in-house for larger banks, but there are companies that are completely dedicated to collecting payments and assessing fees and everything on your home loan. There's something called mortgage service rights that determines the value of those. So even the right to process your payments is an asset because they take a percent of that. And based on how long you're going to pay, the value of that mortgage service right can vary.
And it's interesting that you bring up mortgages, Steve, because this is, for most Americans, this is the biggest thing they'll ever buy. And more people are using shadow bank entities to finance that purchase.
Right, right. As Steve pointed out, Quicken Loans is the largest mortgage lender in the United States, and they're not part of the formal banking system.
And their compatriots in the shadow banking world, like loanDepot and Caliber Home Loans, according to the New York Times, those companies have moved their share of the U.S. mortgage market from 9% in 2009 to 52%.
Yeah, huge
in 2018.
Jesus.
Yep, yeah. The financial crisis definitely changed the landscape for mortgage lending around the world, and especially in the United States.
So if you're getting a mortgage now and you're originating it with an old school traditional bank, you are in the minority in America today.
Craziness to me. I just got a mortgage about 2 years ago, and I went with a bank. But I would have considered the other shadow banking entities, but they just don't compete on price. It was a much higher rate.
And I was actually given guidance by my real estate agent that it's not considered as attractive to have your kind of pre-approval from a Quicken loan or a Rocket loan or whatever compared to a more traditional bank. So I think there's some perception maybe on the parts of sellers that still like the old school cachet, but that's got to be reducing quite a bit because half the mortgages are coming from these
companies. And
it's
not just where they're originated. Their mortgages are bought and sold all the time. So they can be in a couple of ways. You can do a whole loan sale. So let's say you started with a large bank, but that bank can sell your entire loan to whoever, another bank, a pool of investors that do this all the time. Or they can do something else called securitization, which is turn your home loan into pool it with a bunch of other home loans and sell those off as securities tranched into different risk levels to investors.
Are you getting any flashbacks, listeners? Is this taking you back to the good old days of 2008?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question for me is, I guess, should we be concerned that there's been this massive increase in shadow banking?
Well, that's going to be the fun part of our conversation. But let me bring up two positives of the shadow banking industry, I guess I'll call it. First, it adds more liquidity to the economy. So there's more competition and available resources for your home loan, for your business loan and things like that, both of which are way up, I think, around the world. And the other advantage is that it spreads out that credit risk to a wider group. And this is something that we mentioned before, that Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, pointed out, that 90% concentration of payment processing between two large technology companies in the Chinese market. And that's something we want to avoid. So shadow banking in a vibrant competitive economy can spread the risk out to a much wider group that can share the pain or share the burden when things go down a little bit. So now let's get to the fun part of the conversation, all the bad things that could happen.
Nice.
So you can protect yourself and, you know about the issues involved.
I mean, I actually think that the systemic risks here are very difficult to protect yourself from as an individual. And we don't seem to have necessarily learned everything we needed to learn from 2008.
As long as there's money, as long as you're, what is that quote? You'll not know something if you're paid enough, if your salary depends on not knowing it.
Yeah, but I think that's true. So we don't really know what it looks like to have so many of our mortgages and other financial products get originated by shadow bankers and then get sliced and diced across the financial markets. And we live in a world and in a country with very sophisticated financial markets. But sophistication doesn't give you immunity from mistakes mm-hmm. or misjudgments. And the future is just unknowable. So, you know, some of the articles that we have read that we'll link to below, you know, you have a variety of opinions from people who know this stuff way better than I do. Some of them are concerned, and some of them think, well, you know, it might be a rough patch, but on the whole, it's good. We don't know.
Right.
Yeah, and the world changes all the time. You know, they always say you defend and prepare for the last war. And that's definitely true with the financial markets. There's always some new way to get around the regulations or to create risk, no matter what the process is. And we can see that around the world. If you have very strong protections in one area, things will seep out into different areas.
I mean, I think probably one of my biggest concerns about this is that I don't think the rating agencies learned anything, and nothing has fundamentally changed about their business model in terms of how they rate CLOs and CDOs. So it could happen all over again, mainly because we still have a dirty system with the wrong incentives where we require companies to pay a very small number of other companies to rate them. But you know what? When the person writing your check...
Right, that's
is the one
process.
You're judging? It's hard to judge them maybe the way they should be judged.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview, and I forget if it was one of the key players from the financial crisis. I forget if it was Tim Geithner or Sheila Bair.
Dick Fold, my favorite name.
Okay. What was saying that's the thing that he's most shocked about is that there hasn't been any change in the way that the rating agencies work. So... you're still a little bit on your own with those ratings.
I feel like that's the original sin in the global financial crisis of the last decade, and nothing's changed.
So what's new? What's going to happen to us this time? Is Facebook going to be the one that causes the next financial crisis?
Or
are they going to save us?
They're going to do their best.
So they just came out with their formal announcement of their Project Libra, to create a financial system and payments. You know, they mentioned financial system in the article title. I don't know if they said it that way. But they have all kinds of payment partners like Visa, MasterCard.
Uber, Spotify.
Uber's in there. Yep.
Strange bedfellows.
PayPal, yeah, they're all
I think close to 100 different partners that they're aiming for a release next year in 2020. So it kind of... it's kind of given some legitimacy to the other cryptocurrencies. Their prices went up after news of this was getting released.
I read today that apparently Bitcoin has outperformed gold and the stock market and basically any other assets class for the year.
You can always pick a time frame.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
So... we've talked about this before. It was acknowledged publicly by Facebook. They are creating a subsidiary that Facebook will manage, but don't worry, they won't manage it so closely.
Isn't it supposed to be independent, right? Formally independent?
I believe that WhatsApp and Instagram were also supposed to be independent. So these partner institutions have to put in about $10 million each. All of that's going to be used to purchase a basket of currencies to keep the value of the Libra coin, Calibra.
It's being set
stable.
Up as a stable coin, right? Tied to a basket of currencies.
And then, gosh, the thing we've just all been waiting for, holding our breaths for, is that we can buy and sell things on Facebook, and then Facebook will know all about it. Can't wait.
So there might be some kind of independence with the coin, but they're not promising that they'll keep all your transactions or your related kind of activities private. I don't think that was part of the deal. And this can be very powerful. They have an estimated 2.5 billion monthly users on there. So even if it's moderately successful, I mean, this is a huge new shadow banking aspect. So, I mean, if competitors get in there, and we've seen huge amounts of investment, I think $40 billion of fintech investments going in next year. I don't know how long it will be till the shadow banking sector ends up passing the formal banking sector, at least in some measures, in payments on the consumer side. Certainly that's been the case.
Maybe we'll all get paid in Calibra coin soon.
Oh, I just hope so.
Help us.
I will.
Well, Calibra is the organization.
Calibra.
I think Calibra is the wallet. Libra is the actual coin.
Oh, okay.
Libra is the coin. Yeah, yeah.
So Facebook is saying that they'll never use your purchasing info to target ads, which, gosh, isn't that a...
But they already do that with MasterCard data, right? They can buy MasterCard transaction data.
I think this is a hedge.
Shut down? I have no idea.
I think this is a hedge because Facebook sees the writing on the wall and anticipates some kind of crackdown in terms of what they can collect and then use for targeting. So if they can't collect information about every single place you ever go on the web on all of your devices and create a profile out of you, what's the next best thing? Everything you buy.
So needless to say, cryptocurrencies are well out of the formal banking system into the shadow banking world. So the more that grows, the more there is a risk of things getting out of control. And you might say, oh, great, I don't want the government getting into my Medicare, I mean, into my personal transactions and money. But you're also taking a lot more risks. People tend to forget how often we had financial crises before there was a central bank. I mean, in a famous story, not a story, but what would happen is that J.P. Morgan was by far the richest man in the world, like a Buffett and Gates, and let's throw Trump in there, combined.
Trump, that's not going to give you much.
throw some spare change in
sure.
there. combined, and he would lend money to the U.S. government and to smaller banks to keep the financial system in the United States, such as it was, from collapsing.
Is that what Zuckerberg is going
to
do?
So Zuckerberg might be the one to just issue some Libras to do the same thing. But there was a huge amount of risk when there wasn't a formal banking system. And
there were bank runs, all kinds of speculative run-ups that would result in many, many people losing all of their life savings.
There was no securities regulations as well.
There were no securities regulations.
Monica's hair tonic for men. She's got it all. Now only $20 a bottle. Yeah, right. So you can make
20,
any kinds of claims.
35.
Yeah. Oh, inflation. Or 4 Libras. So, you know, if you look at the history... in the late 19th century, it's like I'm always shocked to see. Oh, and then there was a financial crisis. Mm-hmm. They mentioned, and then that's why they said that happened. I'm like, again, and
yeah.
It's like, oh, the Great Crash of 1877.
Yeah,
78.
I feel like it's probably roughly on an average of at least one a decade, one a decade.
And as we've deregulated, we're getting back to that. It's a world of no regulation.
Make it twice a decade now.
Yeah. We can do better. So Facebook is going to be probably the biggest player. I don't see how they're not going to be the largest, in terms of transaction and usage anyways, the largest player on the consumer side.
I feel strongly that this should not be allowed to get off the ground. And I know I'm a Facebook hater, so don't write me any hate mail about it. I already know it. but Facebook has consistently shown a total disregard for both the law the norms as well as agreements that they make with federal regulatory agencies that oversee them. They should not be allowed to get anywhere near here with a 10-foot pole because, honestly, they are too good at the things they set their minds to do. And what they set their minds to do is to collect info and make money off of it. But they never set their mind to do things that are actually good for society. And I would not trust them with a dime, much less a Libra.
All right. Well, those views do not reflect those of the FinTech Newscast.
Actually, they do. They actually do.
Two out of three.
What was I going to say about yes, that's right. There's a lot of concerns from regulators as well. They don't want this to be yet another easily accessible source for money laundering or for people to create a new dark web. Some governments have already said that they're looking at restricting or not allowing those Libra transactions.
But Facebook has said that they're going to require a driver's license or some similar government-issued ID as, you know, a way to cut down on potentially illegal
uses. They're definitely going to try to address those concerns.
So what's two points there? The first one is that I think India banned all cryptocurrencies as a nation, which is kind of interesting. Or they're really they're trying to do that.
Is it crypto mining or cryptocurrencies?
I think cryptocurrencies at all are okay. Banned in India. And the second one is that what is the benefit for me as a consumer to get on the Libra bandwagon here? I already have a
when
Visa
you open your account, you'll get two Libras.
Oh, wow. So it's basically like...
I think it's convenience and it's reduction of friction. So let's say...
They're already marketing so many things.
I know, but so I think where Facebook is really trying to go is making more money off Instagram because Instagram is so visual and they're already capturing a certain amount of revenue from transactions that are generated on there. So if you think about, oh, well, now the only way you can buy things on Instagram, oh, I just love that influencer's
bathing suit.
Yeah.
How do Instagram people sound?
I don't know how they sound. I don't have an account. Life is great. but then you just use your Libra coins to buy that bathing suit. Easy peasy. Facebook gets a cut of all the action.
Are they the second largest advertiser on the web?
Online? Facebook?
Yeah. After Google?
It's Google, no. Facebook, and Amazon, I think.
Right now,
I believe
the last quarter, I think Facebook surpassed Google.
Really?
And now I have seen Google has started to advertise on like podcasts and things talking about how great their SEO is and all the ways that they can help small businesses. So Google never did those ads before. So I think that might be part of the reason.
Yeah.
Google
feels good.
Oligopolic competition ain't that good.
The more competition, the better, generally. But what is it with the messaging apps always getting into the currency? It seems like, I guess it's a natural fit.
It Telegram, makes total sense, yeah.
Telegram is going to get into this space as well.
Sure. You have Telegram, you have Signal in there as well, but in Asia you have WeChat, right? And mm-hmm. Alipay, they're all right. Messaging-based services where you can send money to people. It just seems like a natural confluence of functionality there.
Well, you've already got, so. There are already people you have interactions and relationships with. You already have some contact information. You know, I got to pay you $5 for that coffee you bought me, whatever it is.
Someday.
I hate that when I go on Venmo, I have to actually find you by your username or first and last name or your phone number.
Oh, right.
This way, just boom, it's already on there, send that payment, and we're done.
Yeah, and we'll keep an eye on it and report back to you in future episodes.
I have to say this, for exploration purposes only, I'm going to push back on you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to get a couple of Libras just to see,
do
just
it.
To see what happens.
Get
just,
your Libras.
I'm going to reactivate my Instagram account and just see what happens.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Then you can buy a bathing suit.
Yes.
Although you might need more than a couple.
Oh. There's an incredible whole series of things on BuzzFeed about people who buy stuff online, like off Instagram, and how awfully they fit. It's a whole series of things. Like, I bought this bathing suit on Instagram, and it fit me terribly, or like sunglasses, or like, you know, a rug that's like 3 inches big.
Put it in the show notes for all of us,
please. I will definitely put it in the show notes. Definitely.
That's Steve in a bathing suit, everybody.
It's a whole genre, yes.
Well, we figured out how to boost ratings.
My banana hammock brings all the girls to the
arm. Oh, God.
All right, we found the cutting point there. All right, thanks for listening. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thanks for listening.
Hold on to your Libras.
Or don't.